Hi, everybody. So this is our episode with Stan Ray and Alexi Godbeau. This is one of my favorite episodes yet with two of the best skiers in the world. It was phenomenal to sit down with them and chat about all of the things skiing related. We obviously talk about the new Salomon shift binding since they are both Salomon pro athletes. We talk about what it means to be a pro athlete. We talk about how much alike they are with LeBron James, and how much more relatable they are, and how skiing is one of the few sports where you can just like, you're like, we were at IF3 on Friday and like you're hanging out with real pro athletes as a fan, kind of like it's the only sport where you're just, you're maybe not the only one, cycling's like it too, and Scott mentioned that a while ago, but you're just with other pros, like they're normal people. And I say that jokingly, like we know they're normal people, but they're just relatable, they're cool people. But yeah, anyways, we talk about everything. We talk about the shift, we talk about that, we talk about social media, we talk about injuries, and we talk about the Blank Collective, which is Alexi's project, basically. Alexi and Stan's now. It's the film collective that they are a part of. So we talk about that and the structure of it and a whole bunch of other stuff. Before we jump into the episode, we should jump into some sponsors. So same three as it was for last episode. We've got Apres Headwear. You can find these guys and all of the super high quality headwear that they make. Beanies, flat brims, five panels, these crazy mesh hats that they have. Custom gear, the whole nine, is all available at apresheadwear.com. It's also available if you go to their Instagram and Facebook. It's just at apresheadwear. Steve kills it. It's a great brand. Definitely check these guys out. And let them know that we sent you. And definitely check out our website soon, if not now, depending on when this stuff comes in, for some custom Apres Headwear Out of Bounds podcast hats, which are going to be so sick. Our next sponsor is Drink Tanks. Drink Tanks is a beverage container company out of Bend, Oregon. These guys make everything from gigantic insulated growlers to kegerator caps to insulated cups. And we actually have some of their custom stuff getting done up right now for us in studio here. I feel like I say too much in these ad reads sometimes. It's not even a read. It's like I'm just going off the cuff, and I think that's why I say too much. But anyway, Drink Tanks, hit up Drink Tanks at Drink Tanks on social media and drinktanks.com for more information. It's better if you guys just see the product. And I mean, if anybody is near me or around me or in the shop, you'll see some of these things. The stuff is just ridiculously high quality. It's sick. It's just like one of those cool things that everybody needs to have, especially those big insulated growlers. It's like you can put whatever you want in those things. And yeah, that's basically it. Shout out to Kevin. The next, Ethan's got the loudest email and text message setup because he is deaf. our final sponsor is Panda Poles. Panda Poles is basically a custom ski pole company. You can pick your grip, you can pick the type of bamboo that your ski pole is made out of, you can pick the color of your basket and the shape of your basket, and obviously the exact length of the pole that you need, and a bunch of other stuff. And they've got great accessories items on their website. It's just a cool company to be a part of, to be honest. I mean, I'm super psyched that Tanner wanted to work with us, and yeah, I'm hoping that that we can make it worth it for him. So check out the Out of Blog site, or the Out of Blog page on the website. You can find a link to go to their site from there, or it'll be in our Instagram and Facebook profiles from time to time as well. We'll constantly be doing some promotion with those guys and the product as we go through and kind of get into the ski season. And I can actually use some poles, which ski season is coming and I'm very excited. But yeah, check out Panda Poles at Panda Poles. And pandapoles.com. All right, and let's jump into this episode. Thanks for listening, guys.
All right, let's do this thing. Let's jump right into it. So we are here with Stan Ray and Alexi Godbeau. Is that how Godbeau. You say your last name? Godbeau?
Yeah.
Godbeau. Godbeau. Okay, cool. All right.
Goodbye.
Good boot.
I've heard it all. It's fine.
So Why are we here?
Doing a little podcast for I3, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Why are we here?
Yeah, we're here. That's exactly it. We're here to do, we're just chatting. Why are you guys here? I mean, like, I know why you're here in this room. I mean, like, why are you here, like, in Montreal?
Yeah, we're presenting our new movie. It's called Before Blank, and this will be our fourth premiere, I believe.
Yeah.
As there's a little movie tour here, and we're pretty stoked to present it at IF3 one more year. We've got a bunch of nominations going on, which we're pretty stoked about.
We're a pretty like new film company, kind of the underdogs. We just started. This will be our fourth movie.
So whose film company is it? Is it you guys?
Yeah, us two.
That's it, huh?
Collective, yeah.
All right.
It's a big collective.
Yes.
Actually, no, we have a lot of people working with us.
It's pretty funny because 2 years ago we got, or last year actually, we had a guy email Alexi, and he's like, hey, I would love to come and be an intern for your company, and we don't have an office or anything. Literally, like...
Freestyling.
Very small company.
Yeah. That's cool. Well,
we're growing.
Yeah, it's going well. So how long have you guys been doing it?
As we said, yeah, that's going to be our fourth year. Stan was involved the first year. I was with Casey Dean, and then he went on and did his thing with Level One, but I kept her going for another couple of years, and then Stan jumped aboard in second year, and yeah, we've been doing that together ever since.
Awesome. So you guys are, for people that don't know, you guys are professional skiers.
Yeah.
Exactly. What does that entail? What does that mean, I guess?
Well, it means that you have sponsor commitments and, I mean, in other discipline of the sport, being a professional athlete does mean that you're competing and whatnot. But for us, it's a lot different. We're more of an advertisement for the company through our movies and through social media and whatnot.
Pretty much like a walking / skiing billboard.
Yeah.
For a company and try to...
I mean, represent our companies as much as we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Try to set a good example.
Social media is a big outlet for us. That's how you can create a lot of value through social media. And then obviously like coming up with your own projects. And that's why we kind of decided to start Blank Collective up. To give...
just more value.
Give yourself more value. And it's pretty fun to have the direction. You get to produce your own movie other than waiting for the companies to call you.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting the way it's kind of breaking down now. Like, social media is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like everybody's attached at the hip or
but it's crazy to what point we'll see, I guess, in the future, what social media is going to evolve into. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of companies are doing now, right? Is like they're kind of focusing more on athlete sponsorships and pushing media boundaries, I guess, with social media more than the traditional film route, right?
Yeah.
So why make a film company? I guess that's... Well, so what's the goal with it, you know?
One thing, I think it's... Like, as a kid, I was really stoked to go to ski movie premieres and meet my idols and whatnot and actually see a movie with other people and on a big screen instead of, like, just watching on your phone or on your TV that you're not really paying attention because you got a bunch of shit going on. You can look on the TV, but you're actually looking at your Instagram or kind of messing around. So going to an actual premiere, I think, is really cool. And just... something that's more than like 5 minutes and then you can kind of get bored because people attention spam nowadays is not
everybody's
not
got Goldfish brand. Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, if you put a, I wouldn't say a movie, but even an edit that's like longer than 2 to 3 minutes for skiing, people lose.
It's really hard. Like, even I do it, and it's like I'm the one that's talking shit about it all the time.
Yeah,
it's like,
for sure.
But
if it doesn't catch your attention within the first five or like a couple seconds, you get off track.
Oh, anything. It's like even with Instagram, like that's so immediate, right? But like, and you'll put something in your caption to like relate to it, but people read like the first five words.
Yeah, and then
They're like, "Fuck it, I'm out." You know, like there's no more.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't care. Their attention span's not that great. I'm gonna hit pause on this thing real quick just to make sure I'm not fucking up this audio and make sure we're good. So, all right, sorry, we're gonna jump back in now. So yeah, social media, obviously, Goldfish Brain, that whole deal, that's basically where we'll pick up from here. Do you have, like, is there a goal for Blank to put out those, like, your individual bits out on the internet, like, as individual parts, or are you just planning on doing just the movie route?
Well, we're releasing the movie on October 30th, and then throughout the winter, I'm going to drop each person's parts, or each athlete's parts.
Okay.
Split up differently, so just gonna give us a bit more views and give the chance for people to not necessarily have to watch the entire movie, but actually watch people's parts, and yeah,
and that's going to be coming out on Salmon TV.
Yeah. Okay,
because they're our main sponsor for the movie.
Okay,
and also as athletes,
right?
Yes,
and it's pretty sweet to have them backing our project like that too, and yeah, so it plays off their whatever you call it, their outlet.
Yeah.
On their platforms.
On their platforms, yeah. Which is a lot. They're a lot bigger than ours. Like Salmon TV on YouTube is huge.
Salmon TV has been great views. In the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Return of the Turn thing has been great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put out good content for sure.
Yeah.
Seeking Nirvana is doing a super good job. I think the webisode series too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important to kind of have all that content accessible. So I guess that's the other thing. Is the movie going to be available for free, or is it available, like, are we paying for it?
No, we're... We like doing it for free. Just gets more people stoked and more people viewing it too.
Yeah.
I feel like if you sell it on iTunes, it's like, one, you're only making like 10% of the actual whatever.
No, it's 30% because you always have third parties.
10-30.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a lot.
No, yeah. But if you're actually selling on YouTube or unless you're like a big Hollywood company, or not on YouTube, sorry, on like iTunes or Vimeo on Demand and whatnot.
Right.
If you're not a really big company that's had like... tens and tens of movies released, you're gonna have to use a third party for distribution, and so iTunes will take a third, the third party will take a third, and then you end up with only a third of your actual profit. So you're not making you're not making a whole lot of money, and then less people get to see it unless you're really stoked on like buying a
some people do that. I think it's ski shops that buy it. Like, that's the only people who buy DVDs or.
But
like
at the same time, on the other hand, though, if you put something out for free, then the person won't necessarily. You'd be like, oh, whatever. I don't really have to watch it. It's free. Yeah. Then if you buy it, then you kind of feel obligated to watch it. But it's, I don't know. It's kind of a tricky one.
It definitely is. I think it's like. And I'm kind of the same way with that. It's like when it's free, you're right. Like, it's like, I don't need to watch it today. Like, I could watch it at any point.
Yeah,
like,
and
you're
then not you actually don't end up watching it 6 months later.
Exactly, yeah. Or 6 months later, something better or different is out, and you're absolutely. Like, you've moved on, and you guys will move on next year to the same thing. And that's like, you just kind of roll with it as it goes, I guess. So. Yeah.
But sometimes you'll have, like, your good friends be like, oh, did you watch our movie from last year? It's free online. He's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, sorry, I didn't see it.
Yeah, and it's like you do all the promotion in the world, and you make sure you do all these like stops and premiere stops to make sure everybody knows what's going on, and people still somehow are like,
there's so much content
online. At the same time, I think people also spend a lot less time on social media than we do. Because we're always like, every single day,
you
we're
putting
something like, oh, you didn't
I think
see
people
that?
Do.
Oh, no, man. I think people spend a lot of time on social media. It's insane. Like, and now they have that screen time thing on the new iPhone where you can see.
We
like,
used to have an app for that, but yeah, it's kind of.
Yeah.
But now they have it on Instagram.
What did you do, like, one day? 12 hours?
Oh, dude, mine's like three hours every day. Like, that's like, that's
horrible.
Crazy. Like, it's
just
like.
Phone, that's
we had a hungover day where it was like, I would check my phone. It was an app and it said 12 and a half hours.
That's so bad.
You're like, oh my God, I spent the biggest portion of my day on my phone.
It's crazy. Yeah. And like, I tell people all the time, like, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do this. I'm running around, but like, here
I'll
be
actually fucking around on your 3 phone.
3 hours a day spending on my phone. It's like, it's insane.
Kind of horrible.
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, it's insane.
Then it gets your head all clogged because you're on your phone the whole time.
You're right though. I mean, there's so much content out there. It's like you almost feel like sometimes I feel like I'm obligated to consume the content because it's all there. Like I'm like scrolling. I'm glad Instagram did that thing now where it says like it'll tell you you're all updated, like you're all caught up.
Yeah.
You seen that? Like where you scroll through. So maybe this is my problem. So when you scroll through everything in your feed of the people that you follow and you've seen all the current posts in the last 24 hours, it'll go, you're updated now. So like Instagram will say, it'll do a little check mark and say you're updated now.
I follow
now.
Too many people to get updated.
I guess that's it.
I give up.
I only follow like 400 or 500 people like on my own account. So like when I'm done, you know, like not everybody's posting. It's just like, it's alone. But yeah, so watch
out. I've never gotten to that point yet.
Watch for that. Yeah, when you're just scrolling at the airport and you see that shit, just remember that it exists. So
I'll start now.
Yeah, there you go. Just cruise on through it. So with Blank, do you have a plan to like, are you doing other forms of media too? Like, are you guys, like a lot of companies now are launching a podcast. A lot of companies are figuring out other ways to kind of get in front of a consumer, especially in skiing where like you kind of need to take advantage of every consumer that you can. Like you want to, because it's not that big of a sport. It's not basketball. It's not football. It's,
absolutely.
So do you guys have a plan to build on it, or is film the main thing right now?
Well, so for our next project, I won't talk about it too much because it's fresh out of the oven, but
Still not even in.
Or it's, well, no, we have a full pitch for
just
it.
Just sent a pitch out yesterday.
Yeah, worked okay. a lot so last it's new, week. New.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty new. Anyway, so we're going to be doing some like behind the scenes stuff that's going to be dropping throughout the season, just kind of okay. give ourselves more character a bit.
Okay.
And yeah, so going to be doing that. Like, we'll try to do it like as often as possible, like weekly.
Also have a bit of like athlete interviews, so yeah. you get to know the athlete a little more than just watching him ski.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be in the movie, but it'll be little bits and pieces that we put out.
Throughout, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for sure. I mean, lots of companies are kind of going that route. Yeah. So like people feel more attached to you.
Well,
yeah.
And make like skiers, I mean, we're doing all that crazy shit, but just make it more relatable to everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like we still bullshit and get drunk on Fridays, you know.
Yeah. Like still normal people like
and Thursdays and Wednesdays and, Mondays.
Skiing's kind of one of those sports though where it's like, you know, when you think about your favorite pro athletes, like as a football player or a basketball player, it's like they're so
superhumans.
Yeah, they're not relatable people, but skiers are almost more. Like I shot you an email and you answered like right away. It's like, and it wasn't like a big thing. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, if we're like,
oh, you don't do the same thing with like LeBron James.
No, yeah, he doesn't answer my emails. I tried to get him on this, and I settled for you guys.
It goes to like
his
20th publicist, and then that's actually. It was fourth assistant. He actually never gets to LeBron.
He never even hears it. Yeah, he doesn't even run his own Instagram account for all we know. You know, it's like there's just too much.
For sure he doesn't.
Maybe. Who knows? But sometimes he writes. I don't know. Maybe it comes from him. Maybe it's somebody that just sounds like him and looks like
hacks
him.
His phone.
Yeah, and just posts old stuff. Who knows? Anyway, but yeah. So do you guys feel weird about that, or do you like that you're almost more normal to your fans, you know?
We are normal.
I know you're normal, but like, I mean, I'm saying, not. Yeah. But do you like that you're more related? Like, do people ever like reach out to you and like overly hit you up and hit you up all the time and like want to just like be your bud and go?
Once in a while you have like the super fans.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of cool that you're relatable and you can, you know, you have conversations with your fans. I mean, They're people. Exactly. And the cool part about it is when I was a kid, but when you're a kid, you don't really notice that. Cause when I was a kid, I looked up to my idols like, oh my God, these guys are superstars. And I was so shy to go talk to them. And then you get to meet them and most of them are super friendly. Most of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. And I don't even feel like I'm an idol to any kid, but some kids come up to you and like, oh my God, you're my, like,
no,
and you don't feel like that at all.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just interesting to me, I guess, how close you kind of are, how close you can be, I guess, with your audience.
And the ski industry is not a massive industry. No. I feel like
most of but it's growing.
I mean, it's growing for sure. But like, I mean, if you compare to like American football or like soccer or any of that, it's out of league.
I can't even imagine what it must be like to be an athlete.
I mean, get a bodyguard to go out on the street. I mean, we went for lunch. Some people were jumping on Stan. It was crazy. You know?
Must happen all the time, like everywhere you go.
That's why I have Alexi around. He's my bodyguard.
Yeah, he defends you all the time. So did you guys grow up watching other sports? Like, or was skiing kind of just it?
I grew up watching other sports. I was definitely skier, though.
Yeah.
Through and through. Yeah, my grandpa went to 2 Olympics, and I grew up wanting to go to the Olympics like my grandpa.
Yep.
And watching ski racing, but I definitely enjoyed watching. I'm actually not from Canada. Immigrated with my parents from Switzerland when I was 7.
Mm.
But right when I moved, I got super into hockey. And I liked watching hockey. I never really played it, except for at school, floor hockey. But that's probably my favorite sport to watch is hockey.
Hockey.
Yeah. Hockey, tennis,
golf.
I'm pretty boring.
You watch golf?
Guy.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you like baseball, too?
Tiger Mania,
don't
man.
Like baseball, no. All right. And I played baseball when I was a kid, too.
Yeah. Yeah, baseball is one of those. It's fun to play, but it's horrible to watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So boring.
Yeah,
I don't know. Or else you're like super into baseball, which
I don't know.
I'm not.
I kind of shit on baseball a lot on this, like almost probably every other episode or something like that, because it's like I just don't understand how people spend this much, and it's such a big sport, you know, and like they're
massive.
Making
huge.
The most money, and it's like I have no way to even comprehend it. And like,
I mean, there's no salary cap, so
they can make
$70 million a year.
Soccer is kind of the same, though. You know, like there's no real. It's but like it's a world sport. You know, baseball. It's like as soon as you get out of the U.S., it's like nobody really gives a fuck anymore.
And you know what?
Mexico, Japan, Dominican Republic. Okay, like there's a few.
There's a few other countries, but not many.
Men's soccer is tough to watch these days. They're just like
a bunch of babies.
They get within like 3 inches of each other and they fall on the ground. I actually went to watch a women's soccer game in Vancouver and I thought it was way more entertaining than watching men's
they
soccer.
Go at it.
More badass.
They go at it.
No, they're great. And it's like women's soccer is definitely one of those things that's like it's actually I feel like they're not
I don't want to say the wrong thing, like where I'm saying they're at the same level, like, but I mean, I feel like the pay scale should be exactly the same because I feel like people get just as into it.
100%.
But like the WNBA, you look at a WNBA arena and it's like, oh, it's there's 19 people in the stands. You understand why they're not getting paid the same as a men's.
Absolutely.
You know, a men's pro athlete.
But that's the thing with tennis now. And that's kind of cool is that both men and women are filling stadiums.
Right.
And they are getting paid the same, which is really cool.
That's one of the nice things about skiing too, though, is like you can be a female. Obviously, we're all men, so like maybe we don't really know. But like it seems like they're more relatable or almost as big of a name, I guess, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's they have, well, no, I mean,
for sure. I bet you ask most people like the biggest skier name they can name, and I bet you they name Lindsey Vonn. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lindsey Vonn for sure is the most relatable to the regular, for the person that doesn't.
She's the most known, 100%.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely not relatable. I don't know why I said relatable. It's just
she's also dating like PK Subban.
Yeah, and she was dating Tiger Woods.
Yeah, and then NFL coach. And then.
Well, shout out to Lindsey Vonn. So you both grew up skiing. What was like, was there, I don't know what it's like in anywhere other, like for us, it's like when we grow up skiing, it's not the main sport, right? I'm from Western Mass, so skiing's not huge. We have ski club. There's like 30 people that come to the ski club. We go on Thursday nights and that's like how you get into skiing. So for most kids, that's how they got into it. How did you guys get into it?
What are you going to say?
Oh, that was me.
So I grew up, both of my parents were ski instructors, so off the get-go, I didn't really have a choice to start skiing.
Yeah.
And we grew up right by Tromelo. I'm from the East Coast too. Mm. Well, I'm from Quebec.
Yes.
Anyways, all my friends ski, and then like the whole, my parents' friends group, everybody skied. So for me, growing up, like it kind of like in the up of the freestyle era, it was definitely like all I thought about, and like I tried to play hockey or football, any of that, but it really didn't interest me very much. And I think skiing was definitely played a big part for me growing up. It's just all I cared about, and the only thing I wanted to do was being a pro skier when I grew older, and
that was the goal.
Yeah, and achieved, and I mean keeping going, and
And now what do you do?
I mean, try to get better every day.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
A little different story, but it's kind of the same thing. I grew up ski racing and wanted to be a ski racer, so I raced till I was 21, trying to be a professional ski racer.
Right.
Raced on the World Cup, and then at 21, I actually switched from alpine ski racing to ski cross and did 3 years of ski cross, 1 year on the NORAM, like North American Tour, and then raced 2 years of World Cup, and both years I got injured and was kind of over at the time, and then decided to switch over to free skiing and never look back, really.
So, now you've been doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's been doing okay for you
I
so
mean,
far.
I've always been kind of free skiing. I just love skiing.
Yeah.
And then growing up in Whistler, it's like, it's not a bad place to grow up if you like skiing and biking, which is pretty much what I love doing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If
you could be a pro mountain biker as well.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, it's
would
funny.
You want
it's
to
funny.
Do it both times? Like, would you want both as almost a, you know, a job?
Yeah, I would for sure.
For sure
we have a buddy who does, Casey Dean. But I definitely would. It's funny because when I was a kid, my email was ProBiker2001. And like at one point, I was biking a lot and skiing a lot. This is when I was probably my teenagers. And then when I got to around 20, my parents were like, you got to pick one. You can't do both. And I picked skiing. But yeah, I'm actually kind of glad I left biking behind because where I was at with biking,
start breaking yourself off.
I was starting to get hurt quite a bit. Like I was trying to flip my bike and 360s with my bike.
Yeah.
And now where I see where the sport is, it's like, yeah, okay, I'm so glad I didn't keep going. And
it's
the freestyle
really hard.
Aspect.
Yeah.
Guys are doing 1080s on bikes.
It's insane.
On mountain bikes.
Double backflip on DH bikes.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Yeah.
I'm glad I quit when I did.
Yeah. Rampage is next week or something like that. It's like,
Rampage is next level. It's like, you see some of that stuff, you're like watching it, you'd be like, okay, that'd be fun to hit on my skis and like pop. And these guys are sending like 60-foot backflips on their
like,
on
skis. Like those gaps 100%. Are like so big.
Oh yeah.
I have no ability to even comprehend.
And some of it, it's like you're going like you can't stop, otherwise you're like you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh for sure. It's it's insane to see what some of those guys are doing on as pro mountain bikers, but I don't think it's that much easier to be a pro skier, right? Like it's like,
yeah, it's all
I guess it's like
you still got to go hard and send it And the nice thing about the best sometimes.
I think the nice thing about skiing is that you can bail pretty hard and get up and then go do another run. When you crash mountain biking, you're usually getting hurt, like from anywhere from like little scratches to
a lot couple of broken bones.
There's not a lot of soft landings in mountain biking, and you feel it the next day a lot more for sure.
100%.
It's
a little
great,
less forgiving.
Yeah, for sure. So, how do you guys handle? Speaking of that, how do you guys handle injuries? Right, like as pro athletes, like your job is to go ski, right, and it's to create content for a company. What do you do when an injury comes up?
That guy's a good guy to ask. Yeah, a lot more injuries.
So I've been getting injured. I mean, my knees are kind of like my biggest issues, I guess, as most skiers is. And he's never blown a knee. Anyways, blew my first knee when I was like 16, so I kind of started learning off the bat. And I'm going to say I probably did like 2.5 years of worth of rehab so far in my life, which is quite a lot of gym
time. That's a lot,
So you kind of start getting good at it and know what to do when you actually get injured. But yeah, it's always hard, but especially with your company, is you're like, unless if things are good with your sponsors, usually they'll just go off and be like, oh, okay, like, been doing all right. We won't cut you.
Shit happens,
Yeah, won't cut your contract. But yeah, I mean, I think being injured just by itself is a big part of being an athlete, and you just got to accept it and deal with it. But it's so hard actually being injured like mid-season and watching all your buddies like grow and grow and grow and like learn new tricks and whatnot, especially when I was skiing park. That was the most difficult, because like every time I'd get injured, I'd like go back and rehab and then like learn all the tricks again and go back to competing. But then I was always trying to catch up. I could never like be ahead because I was always injured. And so at one point I was just like, oh, screw it. Like, I couldn't ski park anymore because I wasn't ever able to catch up and like to go back to the front of the line. But so I just decided to go and ski Big Mountain instead. And you kind of get to choose more or less what you want to do. I mean, line wise and trick wise, it's not like you're actually doing a slopestyle contest and you're fully sending it like balls to the wall all the time and doing triple corks and left and right. And even if the course is shitty or like the conditions are shit, someone's always going to send it. So you're going to have to send it too. Like if for us, if the conditions are shit, like nobody's sending. Yeah. Like we're going home and we're going to have a beer, you know?
Or even some days, like you might not be feeling it and your buddies do. You can just like, you can mitigate your risk and hang out.
Because like usually you have an entire season to film or to film a segment, or depending on what you do, or a couple weeks. So it's kind of, it's a little easier than, or on the body, I guess, than competing for sure.
Yeah.
But injuries are definitely a big part of the sport, unfortunately.
Yeah, it definitely comes with the turd. So did you were doing park stuff first? Is that how you kind of like, so that was what you were into and that's how you kind of progressed? Why does it seem like everybody that's a park skier goes and becomes...
Because it's a lot more fun.
I mean, it has nothing to do with getting older.
Well, that probably does too. Yeah. But there's, I mean, there's younger kids that stop park skiing and just go into the backcountry because that's what they enjoy more. But depending on where you're from too, like if you live in Colorado, I mean, most of the things you're going to do is ski park or around Breckenridge or Keystone and that. Or even on the East Coast, I mean, there's not that much big or backcountry skiing to do. Yeah. So you're going to be skiing some rails and hitting jumps with your buddies and whatnot. But I think... Yeah. Just for me, growing older, I definitely picture myself more skiing powder. It's a lot. I mean, I wouldn't say easier on the body, depending on what you're doing, if how hard you're sending and whatnot, tomahawking, and you can twist your body up and a lot of different, and the risk factor as well. I mean, avalanches are very, very dangerous.
There's less soft landings, I think, in park too.
Oh, like, for sure.
So when you hit the ground, you're hitting the ground hard. Yeah, for sure. That hard, especially on the East Coast, like that's.
That's one thing. It's ice.
It's hard. It's hard pack, you know? Hard pack. That's kind of how it is. I mean, you can't really do anything about it. That's what we got. It's what we ski.
Park. So. Yeah. We definitely see a lot of park skiers, like Sammy. I mean, I'm sure I have a couple examples in my head, but...
Tanner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the big one, right? It's like that's... Yeah. It seems like he just went all park to... All backcountry, like just filming.
And a lot of the kids, too, you know, they see those guys, like big names like Sammy, Tanner, and Candy. They go from like a park career into a Big Mountain, and that's like, oh, that's what I want to do. That seems awesome.
Well, that's what I wanted to do, right? Yeah. See, there you go. It takes a lot of effort to actually get to that point, though.
I was
and
never,
a lot of knowledge.
Never a park kid, but I spent some time in the park.
Yeah, you did. San used to do some switch sevens, and
now I can't even do a switch one.
It's definitely like, I don't know. I'm totally blanking on what I was just going to say. It's more like, it seems like the big mountain skiers almost are more exciting to younger kids now. Like when I was younger, it was like park stuff. Everybody just wanted to see 1080s, people do misties. And that's like all people really cared about when I was younger. And like now it's like big mountain skiing is cool. Like it's what people want to do. I think it was always cool. It's like the same thing, but it's more,
it's got a cooler factor. I mean, I was always first ski movie I watched.
Yeah.
I was hooked on big mountain skiing. I'm pretty sure that's what made me switch down the road, watching High Society when I was, I would have been like maybe like, I don't know, 12, 13, and watching Seth do massive backflips, and that's why I started doing backflips, just because of Seth Morrison, watching his segments like hugging huge Lincoln loops. And
I personally always laugh like looking at my evolution, because like when I was a kid, all the, like in all movies, you know, with DVDs, well maybe not with cassette tapes, but with DVDs, you could skip the parts, and I would always skip the like the powder parts because I felt it was so boring and like not relatable to what I was doing.
Yeah.
So it was just, I'd skip powder, and like as it went, it was the opposite. I'd like, oh fuck, like fuck the park stuff. I'd like really only want to watch Big Mountain because that's the only thing that's like exciting to me, you know. So it's just like from one end to the other. Really, it's kind of funny.
I don't know if it's because like, I mean, growing up on the East Coast, you don't get a lot of powder. Like, there's not. It's like
a come on, I thought you guys had a lot of snow.
Tons. I mean, last year was pretty good. It was better. It was good last year. Most of the years is dog shit though. True. So like, it's not like 90% of the time.
But if you go to like Whiteface and stuff like that, you can. There's
sometimes.
Yeah,
I think everything is sometimes.
I've got a good powder.
Oh yeah, stove too. Like on a powder head stove, it's amazing. Like being in the trees, it's tight. It's a ton of fun. You can ski off the chin, off the top, and that's like, I mean, it's a blast. But
in Quebec, here you have the six shocks. I mean, a bit higher mountains.
What's that?
You don't know where that
is? No, I have no idea. I've never skied in Canada.
Actually, the mountains are kind of decent out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Kind of being the keyword in there.
Yeah. It's all like...
I'm spoiled, though. If you're I'm a West Coaster. I'm a spoiled brat.
Yeah. It's all like... I never really got it, and I was always like... When I was probably... I think the first time I skied out west was when I was like 14, and I was just like, fuck the West Coast. It doesn't really matter. Like, it's the same thing, all that. And then when I actually got out there, and I was like, oh, man. Okay. Like, it's just... It's way more... It's like breathtaking. Like for lack of a better word, I guess it's just, it's bigger.
Yeah.
So it's, we'll kind of see where it goes from there. So I guess we should talk about this new binding thing that Solomon is pushing pretty hard. And I like it a lot, I guess I should say before we
get into it. We do
too. Yeah, I'm sure you do. I've seen like, it seems like I've seen 9,000 Instagram posts from everybody, you guys included, about Shift. What do you like about it actually? And what's, I mean, why?
Well, we do a lot of ski touring, and then most of the ski touring we're doing is to get up mountains to film on the way down, or pillows. And the idea of being clicked into a pin binding and skiing pillows, and if we ski them, we lock them out because we don't want them to come off. And it's just like you're asking to just twist your knee into. And then the Guardian was great, or like a Duke or something like that, but it's so heavy. Yeah. So you're clicking into a binding, but every single time you're lifting that binding. Having the Shift, you're clicked into a pin on the way up. So you're just like your normal pin binding. Sure, it's a little bit heavier. Mm. And then you're clicked into like an actual downhill binding on the way down. And it's, at first it was like kind of tough for me to trust it, because you look down and it's like, you can almost see like half your toe piece on your boot, and you're like, oh God. And then you ski it for a couple weeks and you gain confidence in it. And it's amazing. I don't notice the difference when I'm skiing in the backcountry between a normal downhill binding and the Shift binding. So it makes it like so easy for us to tour up, and then you just transform the binding, and now you're in a normal downhill din binding. And it's like, I think it's a huge game changer.
Right.
Yeah. And for everyone who doesn't believe what Stan just said, you're welcome to come and watch our movie tonight. IF3. I mean, you're probably gonna read this after IF3, but all
right,
so
we're on right now. I'm gonna like, we're gonna exactly. leave, close the door, and I'm gonna release it immediately, you know?
You're welcome to come to go and watch Before Blank. How many athletes are there in there? Five Solomon athletes. Yeah. So every single athlete in the movie is skiing on Shift bindings that are on Solomon.
Oh shit.
For the whole movie.
For the entire movie. Yeah.
I ski him like I wouldn't get another binding. I'd ski him on the hill now, no problem.
Yeah. Do you think
if you live on the East Coast and you're skiing like 90% groomers or probably 100% groomers. Yeah. I don't know if that's the best binding to buy, but if you do like ski touring and skiing, I think it's the only binding to buy.
Yeah.
Even if you're just doing side country stuff, I think it's a good binding for that.
It's great
just,
binding.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it can be on your regular ski. You're going to ski all like every day and you ski the shift. And then if you want to go touring, then you have your own binding.
I think there's definitely still use for like a pin binding. Like if you're lightweight and all you're doing is ski mountaineering.
Right.
Then yeah, that's a great.
Still makes sense.
Still makes sense. But if you're like a slack country skier and you like kind of.
I think that's what most people are, right?
100%.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
And you like skiing hard, it's like it's the best binding because you're not really compromising either. You still have great walkability, and then the downhill performance really doesn't change that from a normal binding that you'd be skiing in.
Yeah, and it looks very futuristic. It looks like. It looks aggressive, you know, and that's one of the things I think that a lot of pin binding.
It's like an F1 car.
Yeah.
Look at.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It looks fast. It makes you faster. It makes you a better skier.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it actually will make you a better skier, but probably makes.
And we've been testing it for like last 7 years in the making.
No shit, huh?
We tested a prototype 3 years ago. It's come a long way since then. I can tell you that
for sure.
What's changed since then to make it?
A lot of things. Releaseability, tourability. Yeah. I mean, everything. I mean, it's kind of like everything you're creating, and it's a big process.
Right.
And I think we've came a long way since, like, the last 3 years to actually get the binding ready and be fully open for the open market.
Yeah. Mm. That's another part I really like about working with a company like Salomon. They let us give a lot of input on their equipment.
Yeah.
So we do like a lot of R&R and kind of
R&D.
Sorry.
What's R&R?
R&R. I don't know.
Rest and relaxation. Right? That's actually what it is.
And we get a lot of input on like ski boots, bindings, just all the equipment we use, which is sweet. And we try to make it better, not only for us but also for the consumer. Mm. And I really enjoy that portion of it because like the shift binding was pretty much Cody's idea, and he worked with one of the engineers at Salomon, Benoit, to make that come to life. And it was pretty cool to have, like, I mean, it's a big project, you know, 7 years ago. Mm. You think they're trying to start making this binding.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. And a couple of years ago, there was attempts kind of at something that was more stable for skiers, right? Like the Beast from Dynafit. That was like, it's nice, but it weighs 8,000 pounds. You got to change your...
Yeah.
I mean, the weight of the shift is pretty much exactly, or very kingpin. Similar to the kingpin.
Yeah.
And so you've got a...
The thing with the kingpin,
you're still locked in.
I fucking hate that binding.
You're still clipped into a pin binding.
Yeah, I talk shit about that binding all the time.
Yeah, because I hate bashing. They got a bunch of recalls, though.
They do have... See, and I said that, and somebody emailed me from Marker and was like, it's not that many. It's just these SKU numbers. Yeah. And I was like, I know. Like, I got the warranty notice at the shop. Like, I know what numbers it is, but it's like... I think the difference is, like, kingpin is, like, it doesn't look burly, it doesn't feel burly, and you don't have a lot of confidence in it when you're going and skiing down. I think with shift, it'll be... I haven't skied it yet, obviously, so we'll see what it looks like. I've held it and I've touched it and played with it and all that stuff at all the shows, but, like, we'll see how it's received by the public. I imagine so far it's
been received. And to anyone out there that actually ordered it, just make sure that your shop guy puts the right forward pressure and everything like a regular downhill binding would, like you'd need.
Right.
And after that, I think you're golden.
Yeah, especially... What we found is if you don't clear snow, I mean, this is with pretty much every binding, but that binding especially, if you don't clear the snow out, like out of the toe, it'll push your forward pressure back just because you're, then you might get some pre-releases, but if you make sure you clean out like the toes well and everything, it's pretty bomb-proof. Like it never pre-released when you don't want it to.
Yeah. Plus Stan sent some pretty serious stuff this year on it.
Everyone did.
Yeah. And you feel comfortable.
Super comfortable. I trust. Yeah. And even like with that 13 din.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a guy like Cody Townsend on our team, and he's like, he's a big guy.
Even 2 years ago, Cody was skiing 13 din.
And he runs like a 13, right? Like he runs it to the max.
Yeah.
You
run it to max. Yeah, we crank it.
I skied on 13. Yeah.
But like people are like, oh, I don't know if 13's enough. 13's enough.
13's,
I mean, unless you're like 250 pounds and you're sending 40 footers, then maybe not, but.
Yeah, even then, I mean, 13's still a bit, like, that's a big number still.
Yeah,
yeah, even on a 16 binding, you put it at 13, like, you're pretty locked in there.
Yeah, you're not, And that's the thing, is like, I think if anything, there needs to be a lighter version of the shift, not a heavier version of the shift.
Goes to six.
Yeah. I know, but there's a lot of skiers like lightweight ladies. I think that's the big thing. Yeah. Is that like, and we've had a lot of calls in that were like, hey, like I really like this binding, but I'm not a six. You know, I'm a 5.5 or I'm a 5. And like, I don't want to be at the bottom of the housing. Because with a lot of bindings, if you're at the bottom of the housing, it's like the binding doesn't function quite the same.
Right.
Same thing with being at the top. If you're maxing,
you usually go one back.
Well,
half
actually,
turn
the
back.
Engineer was telling us that you if you're maxed out on the 13, you can crank it to the last bit, and it's
good.
Totally fine.
Really?
I didn't ask him about the low end though.
Yeah,
I wasn't worried about
it's not
that.
Super.
It's a bit selfish, but
yeah. Well, whatever. maybe I'll ask at some point. But and that's the hope. So what do you think the next bit of gear for backcountry and alpine touring that needs to be improved is? Right? Because there's so many things that are getting better, and more people are getting out there. Right. So the next step is. What?
I still think.
I think everybody's heads gain more knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, seriously.
Getting training, like getting.
I mean, there's so much good gear out there. I think getting the right training to actually function in the backcountry and be safe is
absolutely
kind of the most important thing.
For sure. I agree.
Yeah.
If you're talking tech wise, I think ski boots still have a ways to go.
I think so.
I think skis have come a long way since, I mean, the last 10 years. If you go back to a powder ski 10 years ago, it was 90 underfoot, and now they're. You know what? They're actually not. They went really big, and now they're coming back to like between a 106, 112, and those perform amazingly well in all conditions. But I think ski boots can be lighter and perform better.
Yeah, so that's what you would change. You would make them lighter. And
oh, we've been talking about just ski boots in general and like trying to change ski boots to make them better. Yeah, lighter and more performance.
Yeah.
It's easier said than done.
Trade-off right now, right?
Easier said than done.
It's always easy to get the right performance for ski. Well, easier to get a good performance for ski touring, but if you want a boot that tours well and skis as hard as like a 130 like downhill boot, then it's you got to compromise somehow. But we're always trying to
find the
right.
I mean, there are like plug boots that have a walk mode and they're awesome for skiing, but they suck for walking.
Yeah.
It's true. There's a lot of those options, and it's like Nordica makes that Strider, and there's like a full, you see that thing, like with the full bar that locks it in, the lower. And so, I mean, that skis down really well, but it skis like shit.
I really...
It's kind of heavy. It's kind of bulky.
I really think there's something to do with a rear entry boot, like back.
Really?
I'm a strong believer. Like, I think because for walking, it'd be great to have like that motion of a rear entry almost. Like, you don't have it fully open.
Don't talk about it too much.
Yeah. Is it going to happen like tomorrow? Like
No. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but we there was talk about it.
Yeah.
We'll and it's so easy to get in and out of, right?
Yeah.
It's the best.
It is easy to
go for après ski, take your boots off, click them off, and.
And just leave them at the door. Yeah. Just move on. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I don't see a problem with it. I think the problem is going to be getting performance out of it, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that's.
Well, back in the day, they had good performance.
They did, but everything.
It was also back
good
in the day.
Performance, right? Like everything was high performance, and we look at it now, and it's like it's. Dog shit in comparison to
what we have now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the issue
everything
I think
evolves.
Is like, yeah, for sure, it all changes and gets better. It's like 5 years ago, touring stuff was like just touring stuff.
Yeah,
you know, touring ski boots were like not great.
Great,
I mean, were,
for skiing
okay.
Anyway.
Kind of along. So what boots are you guys on now?
Mountain Lab.
The Mountain Lab, yeah.
For both of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you feel like you're still getting enough downhill performance in that boot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we
obviously want more because we're talking
we tweak it out. We definitely try to make it a little better and then add a buckle or two here and there. But
yeah, it's a cool boot. I mean, we sell it. We sell the XL one.
Yep.
And we sell
that
the...
thing is actually. Have you ever put it on?
Because
we went and tested it out, and for doing what we're doing for like skiing hard, it's not the best. But going ski touring, I just went and skied up and then skied a little cooler down. I felt like I was on a running shoe.
Yeah. Oh,
it
yeah.
was so comfy.
You can walk
barely
around
felt
all day.
Like I had a ski boot on. Literally felt like it was a running shoe, like run up the mountain. We had these little skis too.
Yeah.
And then the ski down was all right. I'm not used to it, but
yeah,
if that's what you're into, it's like, that was money.
Yeah, no, I like that boot a lot. Like I said, like I agree for sure that like the downhill performance is a little weird, but
for sure
it still skis really well. I mean, it's crazy.
For
like,
what it is, for sure.
Not even. 3 years ago, we used to get nobody coming into the shop looking for touring boots. We'd buy them because I liked them, and I was like, okay, like we'll put it up on the wall, and maybe we'll sell one, or we'll sell it to like a sponsored team kit or something like that. But that's really all it's been. But now it's like the majority of what we're selling, I think, has a walk mode. Yeah. So we'll see how many people actually end up coming and making it out into the backcountry of that.
Even
stuff.
Out east, hey, that's kind of cool.
Tons. I mean, we're selling. Maybe it's half of what we're selling, but I mean it's
that's a lot,
and they're not all great. A lot of them are like K2 BFCs or something like that, where it's like a cushion boot with like a cocktail clip or something like that. Do it for the gram. Do it for the gram. Everybody's for the gram. Doing it. Yeah, it's the best way to do it. I'm telling you. But yeah, no, even out east, people are getting into it because it's like there's a lot of mountains out east that are just as big as your local hill that just don't have a lift on.
Right.
Like I ski at Mount Sugarloaf sometimes, which is like
I had a NORAM there back in the day.
Yeah. So like not the one that you're thinking of. So there's a Sugarloaf in Deerfield. Deerfield, Mass. It's like it's probably as big at, I mean, vertical wise, it's probably almost as big as Mount Snow, but like everything's tight. There's nothing cut. Right. There's no lifts on it. It's still called Mount Sugarloaf. I don't know why they have to have two on the East Coast. It makes it confusing, but
that's
it,
probably the one I wasn't at then. Yeah.
Yeah. The one in Vermont is probably the one I was at. This one's in Mass. Yeah. That one's good too. And the ski touring there is great, but there's a lot of people that will just show up at the trailhead, like where they would go mountain biking from, and just run those trails.
Yeah, awesome. Well, and people do the same in Trumbull, like my sister, my mom, my dad. They'll just get their touring gear and go up the mountain bike trails.
No shit. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, I hope that's where it goes. That's kind of where it should go. But like you said, I think
it's like an enduro, like still going up in the forest and coming down.
Some of it's kind of sketchy for sure. Like you're in stuff that's like as wide as your shoulders almost, and you're kind of cutting through.
We kind of do that too in the BC.
Yeah.
On the approach route, sometimes it's kind of ridiculous. You're like, who the hell set this skin track up? It's like the steepest thing you've ever seen. Polished ice. And you're just slipping back, like holding on the trees, yanking yourself up.
So is tree skiing like as big of a thing there? Like I know everybody, like you're in the backcountry, but like
I'd say so.
It's on the East Coast, it's like a thing. Like I'll ask somebody when I'm selling them a ski, like, what kind of skiing do you do? And like tree skiing is a type of skiing, apparently, you know? So is it that big of a thing?
Oh, for sure. I think like a lot of people, just a lot of them tree ski. I mean, obviously we have access to alpine, so they won't just tree ski, but
right.
I mean, we spend a good majority of our season in the trees. Like whenever it's snowing and foggy and we can't get in the alpine, which is
not stable enough
until the spring, we're always just skiing trees and pillows and
right. Yeah, that's a good way to do it. I mean, there's obviously skiing's kind of the same everywhere, right? Like there's options, but like on the East Coast, the alpine's not really as much of a thing.
Yeah.
It's not open. Once you get up high, there's still
trees.
It's just trees everywhere, so you're still
some tree places skiing. Have like somewhat of like a good alpine or
kind of. Yeah, I guess I think it's different everywhere, but like Mount Greylock is a good one. That's the highest point I think in
or like Mount Washington.
That's Mount Washington.
Has an alpine. Yeah.
That definitely has some alpine. Yeah, exactly. East Coast stuff, dude. You're not in it, I guess. But yeah, it's cool. I guess it's like it's just interesting to see how the different areas, I guess, treat their conditions and kind of like just gravitate more towards areas. But and I guess that's why there's not as much for avi training for people that have education on the East Coast.
There's definitely less alpine, less risk than
less risk,
when you're living in BC, and I mean very exposed.
For sure. Yeah. So for people that want to get educated, how do they get educated?
The best way to get educated is taking a course, and like you can literally go on Google, go AST Avalanche. What does it stand for? Standard training, I think. And they can just go take an AST1, an AST2 course. And those are your like recreational avalanche courses. Right. And like if you want to go in the backcountry, I highly recommend taking one of those courses and then going with someone that's more experienced, like one of your friends, or even wouldn't even be a bad idea to hire a guide for the first time you go. Right. If none of you guys have experience. Obviously you got to buy all the equipment. But a lot of people just buy equipment and then just go like, oh, I have the equipment. They don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
Beacon probe shovel.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, but like tons of people will buy that stuff. Like BCA does that. Like they have a package. You can just kind of buy it all together. But most of the people don't know how to use.
Yeah,
exactly. So, stuff. But on the East Coast, they do give AST courses.
Yeah.
I wonder if they do.
Some of them are indoors and then you'll just do your beacon. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be like on like.
Yeah. It's different when you're out there for the first time, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. It's a lot different, and the terrain's a lot different as well. But, like any AST courses, they'll show you photos of what you got to avoid and, I mean, try to teach you a bit more about avalanche terrain.
I mean, and these things are pretty good little devices to use. You can even... Yeah. I haven't really looked into it, but I'm sure you have, like, a full AST course on your iPhone, which is completely different, but at least you still get the fundamentals of it.
Yeah.
And I think that knowing how to use a beacon is very, very important as well.
Yeah. Or a tracker or like any, I mean, at this point, like just knowing how to use some of the tools I think is important. And that's, that's I guess where people can start. But
it's crazy how many people buy the stuff and have no clue.
Yeah, exactly.
When I bought so the first time I actually bought it, because I never really needed it, was last summer when I was in Portillo, and we did Super C, and like when we were up there, it was like they were like, oh yeah, you probably should have Beacon Probe Trouble, like you should have all this stuff.
For sure.
And none of it, like it was me and two other buddies, and none of us had any. We just had the stuff, you know. And like, and I ski a lot, and I know what I'm doing for the most part. And even I was like, I didn't even think to look it up, or I was just like, oh, I have it. I turn it on and hope it works, and, mm-hmm. and hope for the best. But it's a stupid way to do things for sure, because you get stuck. And
but it's actually even pretty fun, like training beacon searches with your buddies. You all you need is snow, and you just
hide a beacon,
and then you go like, oh, go find it, and then. Actually, and that's training. The more you train, the better you'll get at it. Because when you actually need it in that situation, it'll just be like first nate. Like,
yeah,
yeah. The more you do it, the more natural it's gonna feel, and the more natural it's gonna come to you. But if you've never done it, on top of that, it's an actual serious circumstance or situation. I think
it just adds that much more stress. Adds that much stress. I've only been in one situation where I had to find people, and it's stressful. Yeah.
I can imagine it's stressful for sure.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Like in the moment, like what do you?
I think it's just, like I said, it's just like instinct.
Yeah.
I didn't even like think twice. I kind of like radioed down, checked my buddy was not buried. He triggered the avalanche, but then there was another group that wasn't with us that was completely buried.
Yeah.
And I just remember seeing them just getting smoked, and I just like went straight to them, started searching for them, and luckily found them. Yeah. There was just two guys buried, but
Two guys buried.
Pulled them out in like under 5 minutes. Both of them. They were both fine. I mean, we lost a couple pairs of skis and a snowboard, but that's not that bad.
Who cares when there's no deaths? You know.
Yeah. Seriously, if you get covered, 5 minutes is a long time to be under there. I imagine when you're just like covered and you don't know what is up and what's down.
Wouldn't know, and I don't want to know. But
yeah, definitely tried to not know ever. Cool. Well, we have some Instagram questions if you guys are down for that.
Go ahead.
So this is for both of you guys. How do you feel about the legalization of cannabis in Canada now?
That's great.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't smoke much weed, but now I can smoke as much weed and, be legal, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, really I'm the same. It doesn't change much my life.
Yeah. It's not going to impact.
No. And like, it was pretty much legal, even though it wasn't legal.
It's been like that for a while.
Yeah,
for CBD creams and stuff, it's pretty cool. You're able to buy it everywhere.
So is that illegal too? Was it like previously?
Well, it was. I mean, a marijuana product. So.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you could get in dispensaries in BC with like a med card, but
no shit, huh?
That's about it.
I think, and I could be wrong. I'm sure I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure you could buy CBD in the States for quite some time before it was legal to buy, like just regular weed. And it's not even really legal everywhere in the States yet.
Yeah.
But. We'll get there.
Not a huge change.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
Doesn't affect your life a ton.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So this one is for you, Stan. How bitchin' was it to watch Kelsey win gold in South Korea?
It was actually, that was the coolest moment of my life.
Really?
Just leading up to it, it was like so cool. And especially because I had the dream of going to the Olympics, and I kind of got to live it vicariously through her. And I'll leave it. It's a long story, but I'll make it a little shorter. 2 days before, I went and surprised her. She didn't know it was coming.
Mm.
And I, like, on my Instagram, I was pretending like I was back, like, in the backcountry with Alexi. And talked to her on the phone the day before her parents were supposed to get there. I'm like, oh, are they flying in, blah, blah, blah. She's like, oh, yeah, they just left the airport. And I was at the airport with her parents. It was pretty funny. Completely played off. And I fully surprised her. And then on the day of the men's race... So she came to the men's race and I was there. And she's like, oh my God, you came to see me. I'm like, yeah. And then one of my teammates ended up winning the event.
Yep.
And my best friend actually came fourth that I used to race with.
Yep.
So then we partied the night before Kelsey's race because that night we didn't party. There's with media and testing and everything. You get home at 12 and you're exhausted. So we went out the next night for Brady's, to celebrate Brady's gold medal.
Mm.
And we got back to the hotel. It was like 12:30. And we're like, oh, we should go for one more drink and just a quick bite to eat. Like, oh, okay. And that one more drink turned into five bottles of scotch and a bite to eat. And we got back home at like 6 in the morning. And we had to leave at 7 to go watch Kelsey's race. So didn't wake up to my alarm. Hotel phoned me, didn't wake up. And then finally my buddy comes in, like, pounds on my door. He's like, Stan, we gotta go. We're already late. So we rip up to the hill. We actually sneak through, like, security, kind of. There was, like, a half-hour lineup, and if I waited a half hour, I would have missed Kelsey's first run, first heat. So my buddy's like, take your jacket off. So I took my jacket off, and he gave it to one of our girlfriends to put it under her jacket to make it look like she was pregnant. And he's like, we'll go through VIP. And be like, oh, can we go through VIP? Oh, my wife's pregnant. And they let five of us through VIP, run through there, and then, like, ran up to the hill, and I didn't miss a thing. And then watching her, it's like, it's crazy how it's more nerve-wracking. I don't know. I've never been in the Olympics, but I competed at a high level, at X Games and stuff. It's more nerve-wracking watching somebody that you're really close to than actually you doing it, because you're like, you're in the moment and you're focused. But when you're watching, you have no control over what happens. Yeah. And it was pretty crazy.
That's that's insane.
It was a wild day. And then it's pretty funny. She won, and then I jumped over the fence and give her a big hug and give her a kiss. And the first thing she says to me, she's like, did you drink scotch last night?
Immediately after the race.
Yeah.
At least you made it.
Yeah.
Are you crying?
Are you crying? I was crying. It was a mess. It was like, I was so happy.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it was super cool. It was, like I said, it was the best day of my life, and I was super hungover.
Best hungover day of your life, for sure.
Yeah. Best regular day, even, huh? That's crazy.
Best regular hungover day of my life. Yeah, no, it was really cool.
Sick.
Well, yeah.
That's great.
And then they didn't celebrate. And she,
really?
The coolest part too, she came, her best friend came second. So it was like,
yeah,
it was like just the icing, you know, it's the cherry on top of the cake.
Yeah. That's sick. And they didn't celebrate, huh?
They're not a huge party. I mean, they kind of celebrate. I wouldn't say they celebrated.
No, when Kelsey,
compared to what we did with Brady, didn't celebrate.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So I got another one here for both of you guys, and then we'll wrap this thing up and figure out a way to get to this movie premiere. Favorite trip to date, either individually or together. That's obviously kind of a broad question, but favorite trip, if you're picking one trip, what is it?
That's tough. A lot of trips. We're talking ski trips probably, though.
I'll let
Alexi take the reins.
We've all done a lot of cool trips, but I think, or last winter I did an 8-day winter camping trip with the Salmon crew. Sick. Which was for the shift launch that I just released.
Yep.
And it's on Salmon TV, actually. So we just spent 8 days out in the backcountry in BC near Revelstoke. And we're, like, at the bottom of the sickest pillow zones, like, ever. And you're basically at camp looking at all the pillows. Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to ski this line. I'm going to ski this line. I'm going to ski this line. Then you're actually winter camping, which is awesome as well. Just a different experience to actually, like, live it. And so you're just leaving in the morning from your tent, like, had breakfast, and we had some people helping at camp, and then click your skis on and go right to the pillow zone and come back and do the same thing over and over and over. It was so
for
sick.
8 days, huh?
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with the first free ski trip I ever did. It kind of kick-started my career.
Yeah.
And that was, I got called, it was called Moment's Notice, and I got called to go to Japan. Go ski there with Chris Rubin and Tristan Knotzer. And it was like a dream come true. Mm. Mike Douglas calling me to go on a free ski trip. And I'd been bugging one of the guys he worked for because I went to school with Blair, one of the editors there. And I'm like, dude, you got to get me on a trip. For like a whole year, I bugged him and bugged him and bugged him. And then finally I got a call, and it was like probably the best trip ever, because we got there and it was like a massive snowstorm. We were only there for a week. Yeah. And I think the smallest pile day was like 35. We got there, it snowed 70, 50, 60. Wow. And then the fourth day, it snowed 30. And we're like, it only snowed 30? Like, so spoiled. And it was insane. Like, just powder every day, chest deep. And then Rubens and I actually ended up extending our stay because we're like, it's too good to go home. Okay. And we didn't have anything else going on after. So we stayed with the photographer for an extra 4 days. And we actually got to see the sun one of the days. So it was pretty fun.
Sick.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then we did one 2 years ago to Stewart. That was pretty sick.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Stewart was pretty fun.
Yeah. It was 3 weeks. What's kinda
Stewart, BC. It's like...
on the frontier of Alaska, pretty much.
So if you're going far one north. Place destination-wise, what is it?
If you want to,
your favorite place to go to. Like, if you have to pick, gun to head.
El Salvador. Surfing. No kidding.
No,
I think the answer that nobody wants to hear. Yeah, right.
British Columbia. Period. Yeah. Yeah, for me, just
always
doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, but it's got everything.
It's got everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. For skiing wise, it's
I don't have one I love place. It.
If you love powder skiing though, Japan is like if you go to Japan in January. Right,
that's what people say, right? In January, you can't go wrong.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's
not, I mean,
maybe.
I'm sure people have gone wrong. But
yeah, if you go like 1 week, but if you go like 2 weeks in January,
yeah,
you're gonna be hard pressed. I've gone four times and I've never been skunked.
Disappointed.
Yeah. Really?
Same. But they had a bad week this year, but I came later on the trip and I got the good snow, but they had about 4 or 5 days of shitty snow.
Huh.
Which is rare in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In January.
That's the vibe I've been getting from people, but
it's pretty common you wake up in the morning and it snowed like, I don't know, what, like 24 inches overnight.
That's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. So we'll wrap this thing up. So definitely check out the movie. This is not going to go out today. So check it out. Where is it going to be released?
Solomon TV, and then also on our website at blankcollective.com.
Blankcollectivefilms.com. Thanks, Dan.
Mm-hmm. He made the website. Wow, he's in charge of everything.
Yeah. he's
everything.
Just in charge. And where can people find you guys on social media?
Well, Alexi Gotbu and at Stan Ray 7.
Why 7?
Stan Ray was taken. And 7's my lucky number. I was born on April 7th. Stan Ray 7.
All right, Stan Ray 7. Awesome. Thank you guys for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, that was our episode with Stan Ray and Alexi Godbout. Thanks to those guys for coming on the show. Once again, it was great. Shout out to Solomon they're really the ones that make it happen for these two athletes for the most part, as they're both sponsored by Solomon. And Solomon does a great job of taking care of their athletes. They do a great job of kind of supporting their ventures as more than athletes, and that's kind of exhibited in their support of Blank Collective. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Follow those guys on social media. I'm sure you already do because they both have 97 million followers. Not really, but you know, a lot. Follow us on social media at Out of Podcast. Make sure you leave a review if you can about the show on iTunes, on Android Store, on whatever medium you listen to. And we'd really, really, really appreciate it. Check out our sponsors, Drink Tanks, Apres Headwear, and Panda Poles. All three of those guys are sponsors that make this show happen. And along with you guys listening, that's really the only way that we can keep doing it. I guess I could keep funding it out of my pocket, but it's a lot of work and it's expensive, you know, but we love doing it. So that's really all that matters. But yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you soon.